All right. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. We got started in the first two or three verses, but we'll go back and read them because it's been a couple of weeks. We, of course, are obviously getting near the end of this tremendous book, and we have learned so many life lessons from it. And it's been good for me, and I hope it's been good for you. Here toward the end, he especially starts focusing on the young people, but also he is focusing on the end of our lives, death, and some of the issues like that that are certainly critical. So let's go back to verses 1 and 2 of Ecclesiastes 11. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a serving to seven and also to eight, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. And there's a lot of applications. I think it's pretty obvious what the basic meaning is, but the applications of these verses are rather broad. And we'll try and look at some of them. There was an ancient practice where they would actually take seed, you know, depending on what kind of seed you were talking about, and especially in Egypt, and they would put the seed in the ground near where the Nile River was, and then, of course, the Nile had annual floods. The Nile would come and basically kind of make it like mud, sort of. People would then kind of tromp on it to push the seed on into the ground. And then, of course, it would come up, and even today you can still see the areas around the Nile that are very green and lush and so forth. Well, that was an ancient practice that took place for a number of years, and that could be an allusion to what he's talking about here when he talks about cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days, because it looked, you know, when you planted and it was mud and then stomped in the ground, it didn't appear to be anything. But then after days, then you'd start seeing the crop. And of course, in this case, the bread was made from the seed. And so that's probably where the idea came, or the practice came from. But it's the applications of that are critical. There's all kinds of times when we are planting different types of spiritual seed where it may look like at first that there's not much of a crop. And it's easy to get disappointed or it's easy to get discouraged. But I think the Bible is very clear that our job, our responsibility, our duty is to make sure we plant. That we plant. You know, we can't expect a crop if there's no planting, right? We know that from everyday experience. And so if we do want to find any type of crop, to reap any type of crop, then certainly we're going to have to do our part. And it may come in times that we're not expecting it, in places we're not expecting it, and that's great. And there's nothing certainly wrong with that. Let's read a couple of verses. Let's go to Psalm 126, first of all, and then we'll go to Proverbs 19. Psalm 126, and we'll read verses 5 and 6. You will recognize these, especially after the song that was based on these verses. Psalm 126, verses 5 and 6. Those who sow in tears shall reap in joy. He who continually goes forth weeping, bearing seed for sowing, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. We, of course, I know I grew up singing that song about bringing in the sheaves, about sowing and reaping. And again, there's so many applications to this tremendous passage. But when we're talking about teaching the lost, you know, we're talking this coming Saturday about personal work, and we know our responsibility about personal work and people that we need to be teaching and talking to and inviting. Well, there may not appear to be a very immediate response. But we can't guarantee the response. That's not our responsibility, is to guarantee the response. The people have to have the right kind of heart, don't they? You know, we read about what was it, Paul that planted and Apollos that watered, but God gave the increase. It's not about you and I giving the increase. You and I don't have that power. We can't do that. But we can plant and we can water, and that's what we're going to be doing Saturday. We're going to be doing some planting, and some of it will actually be watering. So, again, I hope as many as possible can participate in it. Sometimes, you know, living the Christian life can be very difficult. We live it in opposition, we live it in strife, we live it in toils, there's troubles, and we might get very discouraged. But just like those verses say, you know, we have to think about the end. We have to think about the end and what's going to happen in the end. We just have to be faithful. And we have to not give up. And we have to be patient. And we have to be long-suffering. And we have to keep on planting, like those verses talked about. Keep on sowing and not stop. And never forget one of the elders at Aurora when I worked with him years ago. When him and his wife were first married, I mean, he was very anti-religion, period. I mean, he just had nothing whatsoever to do with religion. Never really had any kind of religion growing up. And so for years and years and years, his wife, who had grown up in the church and her parents, you know, were members and so forth, and her sisters and everything were, well, what she did, two things that she did for years, and I don't mean for weeks or months, I mean for years. Number one, she took her kids, and I think they had three if I remember right, two boys and a girl. She took them every time to services. He didn't want her to, he complained about it, griped about it. She did it every time. Didn't make any difference, she always took those three kids to church services. And number two, she, all the time, she would leave, you know, a gospel paper laying around, a tract laying around, something like this lying around. And for years, she didn't really know if he was ever reading any of them or not. And so after many, many, many years had went by, one Sunday morning, he said, well, I think I'll go with you. You know, I'm sure she had to pick herself up off the floor, you know, obviously. But and he went with her. And eventually was baptized, and then years went by, and he's probably, I don't know, late 60s now, maybe 70, I don't know. Became an elder. And I think it was because she never gave up. You know, he saw how devoted she was, and that he had been reading those tracts, and he had been reading those papers, and he had been reading that information that she just left lying around. Now, she never, you know, goaded him with it. She just left it lying around and strategically placed, but still lying around. And that paid off. Well, I think that this verse, you know, that would be an application of this verse. So we can't give up. You know, we want to keep casting our bread upon the waters. And it says, give a serving to seven and eight, or also eight, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. And of course, you and I don't know. We've talked about that in this book before. We don't know what the future holds. We don't know what kind of bounty there will be. We have no idea how much reaping there will be, because that's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is to keep on sowing and not stop. And I think certainly there's an application materially, but I think most importantly it's the spiritual application that's so important for us. You know, let's not be weary in well-doing, in doing good, because we'll reap if we don't lose heart, if we don't faint. Because it does get discouraging at times. You know, I'm sure that lady got discouraged, you know, after doing it for years. I'm sure she got discouraged. She never stopped, though. She kept doing it. And that's the key to all of this, I think. All right. He goes on and says, if the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. Now, admittedly, the verse 3 might have some different interpretations, but I think the overall thought is, it's pretty plain, I think, for us. If we're still talking again about the idea of sowing and reaping, which I think he's, the idea is still there, the idea that God is the one that that blesses us, there's where the reward is, there's where the reaping is. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And that's exactly what they do. See, he's using everyday, ordinary example. When the clouds get full enough of rain, what happens? They empty themselves on the earth. And, of course, the Bible talks physically about how God sends rain on the just and the unjust. We do get those physical blessings, but, again, I think if we're thinking about the spiritual ones, which are far more important, I think that's where we can get the most out of these verses anyway. We're not, he says, if we're going to observe the wind, when will we ever sow? And putting these kind of verses together, or if we regard the clouds all the time, we'll never reap. Is there ever a perfect time for sowing? No. The ground's either a little too wet or a little too dry, or it's a little too cold or a little too warm, or it's a little too windy or it's not windy enough. There's never a perfect time. And I think that's what he's wanting us to know in verse 4. If we continually are waiting for a perfect time, perfect condition, perfect circumstances, perfect everything, we'll never do anything. Isn't that true? Has there ever been a perfect situation for anything? It's never perfect. It's never perfect. So if we're going to be like that, we're never going to do any sowing. It says, well, I'm going to wait, Yes. Okay, that's a good point too. Very good point. And an application that we really need to be aware of also. And again, I think it's some of these applications that are really critical to us, especially as we're thinking about, opportunities and people that we want to see in heaven. People that we want to see come back to church. And we've been talking in some of our meetings about how many people there are that we personally know that have left the Lord for whatever reason. And the reasons can be, whatever. But so many of them, and so many that live, down the street from us or, across town from us. Just countless numbers of people who have, for whatever reason, they've stopped being faithful. And it's very sad. And some of those are the ones, of course, where we want to focus on, but others as well. But it's never going to be perfect. This Saturday isn't perfect. Okay? Is it perfect for anybody? No. It's not a perfect time because there isn't any such thing. So, sometimes you hear people say, well, you have to make your own luck. Well, that's kind of what this is talking about as well. You're just going to have to do it. Okay? Because it's never going to be just perfect. Let's go a couple of places in Proverbs mention this. The same thought. Proverbs 20, verse 4. Notice that. Proverbs 20, verse 4. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 4 says, the lazy man will not plow because of winter. He will beg during harvest and have nothing. Why is he not plowing? Well, it's not the right time. I'm not going to do it. It's too cold, or it's too this, or it's too that, or whatever. It's not perfect. Same way, Proverbs 22, verse 13. Proverbs 22, verse 13. lazy man says, there's a lion outside. I shall be slain in the streets. Okay. That just went away. Same thing. I can't go outside. There might be a lion there. Well, there might be, but it's pretty unlikely. Especially when we use that when we're talking about doing good. Of course, this has to do with benevolence as well, but you know, ultimately, we want benevolence to essentially turn into evangelism. So the lazy man says, there's a lion outside. I might get killed. Well, yeah, you might. On Saturday when we go work and we go talk to people, something might happen. So I'd better not go. See, that's this type of mentality. Something might happen. Well, yeah, something might happen, but if that's the way you're going to live your life, you'll never do anything good. You won't ever go visit anybody. You won't ever get out of your house. Conditions won't ever be right to even to come to worship, will they? If you're always looking for everything to be just perfect, it's just not going to work. It's not going to happen. And so I think Solomon is teaching us some really good lessons about, you know, using opportunities, whether they're perfect opportunities or not. Use them. Just like Misty brought up. We don't want to miss them. And, you know, we are held accountable for our opportunities and what we do with them. Right? We're held accountable for it. So, you know, God will not, you know, say, well, I understand things weren't perfect. Okay. No, that's not going to do it. So, some tremendous lessons about using opportunities, using sowing when we can, and doing as much sowing as we can, and understanding that it's God that provides the increase, and we don't have anything to do with that. All right, to verse 5 and 6. As you do not know what is the way of the wind or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. In the morning sow your seed, and in the evening do not withhold your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, either this or that, or whether both alike will be good. And again, we could talk about that in the physical sense, and those certainly are true in the material world, the physical world, but I think what's most important is the spiritual application of that. First of all, we don't know how the wind moves. We don't know the way of the wind. We don't know how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child. You know, those things of science are just, you know, we just know such a tiny bit. And I know the more I study in science, the more I realize how much more there is to know. And it's amazing how much there is to find out. And there are so many things that we just don't have any idea how they work. Just have no idea. People have all kinds of theories, but that's about it. So we don't know those things. And of course, we don't know, and one of the ideas about this is we don't know about man's spirit. You know, that's something that we can't, is not tangible. You know, our soul and our spirit is not tangible. We can't weigh it. We can't see it. We can't touch it. We can't smell it. You know, that's why so many people don't believe in it. That we don't have a soul, a spirit, is because they can't use their five senses. But you and I know, of course, that we do have the Spirit. We know that God's the one who gives us a Spirit. The Bible's very clear about that, isn't it? So we know we have a Spirit. We know God's the one who gives us our Spirit. But we don't know. We don't know what a Spirit is. I mean, you and I can't conjure up a Spirit. We can't see one or again, feel one. So we don't understand that. It's because it's beyond us. We can't. You know, we just, it's impossible for us. Just like we don't know about how, you know, the whole miracle as they use that term loosely today, of childbirth is just, you know, from conception to delivery is such an amazing thing. I mean, every little thing that happens in that whole 9-month process is just phenomenal. How a woman's body changes and how the baby develops and how every little thing has to be just perfect. You know, when a woman, when the baby starts to form inside a woman, well, under normal conditions, that would be considered some type of an invader. And the woman's immune system, under normal conditions, would try to kill that. Well, it happens. Some people would say by chance, but we know it wasn't by chance, it was designed that way, that a woman produces a chemical that keeps her immune system from considering that's an invader, a foreign agent. Amazing. I mean, it's amazing all the things that happen. So no wonder we don't understand how that happens. It's just so complex. Obviously something that couldn't have happened by chance. Because all of these, you know, multitudes of things all would have had to happen to exactly the same time. So he says, similarly, we don't know the works of God who makes everything. You know, he's been talking about sowing and reaping. And he says, the same way we don't know those things, we don't know how God works in the world. We don't know, you know, when things are going to happen, or if things are going to happen, or if John Doe is going to accept the gospel, or if he's always going to be, you know, we don't know those things. But we still are supposed to do what? Sow your seed in the morning and sow in the evening. Since you don't know what is going to happen and all of these things, since your job is just to keep sowing. Morning, evening, noon, night, whatever. Because he says you don't know which will prosper. When we, you know, if you invest money in a number of different companies or stocks or whatever, no one knows. Even the best financial advisor doesn't know 100% which of those are going to produce how much money and which of them are going to fall or whatever. No one knows for sure. So, since we don't know what will prosper, either this or that, or maybe both, what are we supposed to do? He says, you keep on sowing. See, he keeps emphasizing that over and over and over. We sow because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know the end result. We don't know how much fruit's going to be produced. We don't know those things. And I'm tending to focus mainly on evangelism because that's kind of what's on our mind, but you can apply it in lots of areas of your life. But that's what he wants us to do. He wants us to be faithful, continue to do what we're supposed to do, and not be as concerned about the results as we are about putting our efforts into sowing and again, watching for those opportunities that come up. And they can be everywhere. I don't know if I've told you this story before. I probably have, so I'll tell it again. But when we lived in Springfield, we went to Kansas Expressway Congregation. There was a guy there. He's passed away since that time. But he grew up in a Pentecostal-type church and was converted after he met his wife. And he was a very faithful member for years. But one of the best personal workers I've ever seen in my life. We were at there was a grocery store across the road from the street building back then. I don't know if there still is or not. But we were there after services one Sunday night. Well, he was there too. And we had just finished checking out, or we had just walked in. I don't remember. Been a long time ago. But we saw him in line, okay? And he was checking out, and this bag boy or whatever, you know, was bagging his groceries. And you know what he was doing? He was talking to the boy about, well, do you go to church anywhere? You know, what kind of background do you have? Have you ever gone to the Church of Christ before? And that's what he was doing. I was amazed. I would have not thought to have done that. But, I mean, everywhere he looked, he saw opportunities. I guess that's my point. And he took advantage of them. And he was a wonderful personal worker. He led so many people to Christ. But I tell you what, I know he had lots of rejections, but he kept on sowing. Okay? Morning, night, didn't make any difference. He kept on sowing. And that's what made all the difference. He never gave up. His whole life, he kept on doing that. Because, like it says, he didn't know what was going to prosper. Didn't know what would be, you know, this one or that one or neither or both. But he was a wonderful example to everybody at that congregation. All right. Verses 7 and 8. Truly the light is sweet and it's pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun, but if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. All that is coming is vanity. You know, he hadn't used that phrase in quite a while. Vanity. He started out the book. Remember how many times he used the word vanity? The first few chapters? It was about every other verse, seemed like. Vain, empty, worthless, without any use. Well, a lot of times in Ecclesiastes and in other books, light and darkness are used for good and bad, or life and death. And I think it's actually probably a combination of those two here. Truly the light is sweet and it's pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. And it is. I mean, that is wonderful. It's a wonderful thing to do physically. Why do you think he would talk about being alive at this point, after he's been talking about, you know, casting your bread and sowing in the morning? And why do you think he would talk about that now? Why would he bring that up in verse 7 and 8 about living a number of years and so forth? What would that have to do with what he's been talking about? Any ideas, suggestions, possibilities, words? Okay, I'll tell you my opinion. My opinion, which may be worth very little, actually.
You just keep having trouble, don't you?
Well, that's very true, especially when you look at verse 8. What happens, you know, if most of us live to be 70, 80, 90? Are we able to do as much during the latter days as we are during the... Yeah, we're not. You know, if we think that, well, I'm going to do all of my personal work after I retire, it's a bad idea. Because he's going to talk about youth and vigor and vitality here in a couple of verses, which I think he's leading up to. So it's good while we have health and vitality and while we're, you know, living and are able to do things, to do them. Do them now. Do them while you can do them. Because for a lot of people, it happens that, you know, if we do live long enough, we're not able to do a lot. And that's just life. That's just the way it is for everybody. I don't have the energy I had 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And that's just life. That's the way it is. And you and I can't do really anything about that. He especially addresses that in chapter 12. So when we do have, you know, the opportunities and the abilities to do our sowing, then we need to do it. Because, again, we're not going to do any sowing after we leave this world. Once we leave this world, everything is set. There's no more opportunities to do good, do benevolence, do teaching, nothing. I mean, our only opportunities are in this life and when we have the abilities to do them. When we can do them. When we feel like doing them. In other words, our health allows us to. So, you know, if we keep putting it off again, when we're thinking about, oh, well, I want to do it when everything's just right, then it won't ever be just right. And we'll lose those opportunities. Because that's where we're all headed. There will be some people who are alive when Christ returns, whenever that happens to be. At least 1 Corinthians 15 tells us that there's going to be people alive. But most people, obviously, since the days of Adam and Eve, will have passed away before then. So that is the natural thing to assume, right? Is that we will die in this world. That's just the natural thing to assume. We might be alive when Christ returns, but the natural thing would be for us to pass away just like others do. And we might, you know, die when we're young, but most people don't. So, again, the natural thing would be to assume that we would live many years, and we want to use the years that we have, that we do have the health and the abilities and so forth, use it wisely to do our sowing in the morning and in the evening. Prepared. That's a good point, because we don't know. Have no idea, actually, do we? Not a clue. Don't have a clue when that's going to happen. So he ends up, and our time's about up, but verses 9 and 10, then we go to the idea of young, which goes into chapter 12, of course. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. So there's two really, I think, important points from that. Number one is, use your youth. And again, when you have the vitality and you have the energy and the vigor and so forth, the health, use it wisely. Don't use it to satisfy the flesh. Don't use it to satisfy your worldly pleasures. It says that's not what youth is about. Okay? It's not what it's supposed to be about. Now, young people often use it for that, but I mean, it's not supposed to be for that. Because he says, you know, be careful what you do with your youth, because God's going to bring everybody into judgment. Everybody. Young and middle-aged and old, and everybody's going to be brought into judgment. So we want to make sure, young people, that they put away evil from their flesh, because oftentimes people use their youth very unwisely. All right. Well, Lord willing, we will start with chapter 12 next Wednesday night. Thank you very much for being here tonight.